Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about books we'd like to recommend.
And Chasley is bringing to us three different science fiction novellas. I'm not going to remember all three of the titles, but I know the first one is The Deep, and I think the last one that you're talking about is The All Systems Red, which is the first book in the Murderbot Diaries. Mm-hmm. I cannot remember the middle one.
The middle one actually has the strangest title, so it's difficult to remember. It's called To Be Taught If Fortunate, which is a book that I love and a title that I hate, but we'll get to that one in a second. It's actually really interesting to bring these three novellas together. They're all speculative fiction, so fantasy, sci-fi, and they are all not written by men, which is very interesting in, like, the sci-fi world.
Yes.
You have Becky Chambers and Martha Wells, who are award-winning authors and women, and River Solomon is an award-winning author who is non-binary, which is actually an excellent place to start, because one of the most amazing things about these all three amazing novellas, along with the author's other works, they're diverse in every way possible, just incredibly well written with, like, such a variety of characters, which is a huge draw for anyone like me who is maybe tired a bit of reading of the fantastical escapades of white dudes. So I wanted to talk about first is The Deep by River Solomon, though you'll notice on the cover that it has four authors listed, and that's because this book is, like, the end of a journey, at least maybe the end. Who knows? But maybe they'll make a TV show and they can continue it. But you have River Solomon, and also listed are David Diggs, William Hudson, and Jonathan Snipes, who are all members of an experimental hip-hop and rap group called Clipping. And they wrote a song that was commissioned by This American Life for an episode called We Are in the Future. And that is based on the underwater mythology of the 90s Detroit electro band Drexia.
This is all so trippy and so amazing.
It's like at the six same time. References in one.
I know, right? It's almost too much to say out loud. Do you know David Diggs, though, played Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson in Hamilton. And I just found out that he reads this audiobook. So now I have to reread it because I've read it, like, in text the first time. So now I have to listen to it. So anyway, what all of those things are about is this mythology about the water-breathing descendants of African slave women who were tossed overboard and have built their own underwater society.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, talk about an origin for your mythology.
Yeah.
So the African slaves being brought over, the women being tossed overboard. And the idea is really interesting of, like, the water in the womb and, like, these children that basically come from them and never learn to breathe air. Instead, they pass from one water environment into the other. And it's definitely fantasy.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
It's also really just a beautiful and horrifying kind of emergence there. And so it's particularly about this one member of the Wajinru, that's what they're called. They're not really mermaids, though. That's what it looks like on the cover. One of them, her name is Yetu, and she holds the memories for her people. So their past is too traumatic to be remembered by everyone all of the time. And so they basically forget it and they give it to her. She's the historian. And so she remembers everything for everyone, which, as you can imagine, is quite the burden.
And it's kind of like pouring water into a vessel to contain all of the memories. It's really fascinating.
It is. I mean, honestly, there's not one thing about this book that is not fascinating. It's all amazing. One thing that's a little bit different about it is that it does have kind of like a flower language to it. Like, it's like reading poetry. So, I mean, it's a good thing that it's short because it does take a long time. You want to sit and you want to process as you're going through it. But it works. It's not, like, flowery to be obnoxious. It's flowery because that is how this, I mean, like, it works for it so well. And some of the quotes that I found for it that were in it that were just so incredible. She says, "One can only go for so long without asking, who am I? Where do I come from? What does all this mean? What is being? What came before me and what might come after? Without answers, there's only a hole where a history should be that takes the shape of an endless longing. We are cavities." And so she's talking about, like, that, you know, that forgetting that everybody else has, and, you know, what do you do with that? She says the remembrance took more than it gave. It required that she remember and relive the Wajinru's entire history all at once. Not just that, she had to put order and meaning to the events so that the others could understand. She had to help them open their minds so they could relive the past too. It was a painful process. So, like, that makes it sound like you're just trapped in this one moment, that there is actually is a plot, like, like her dealing with all of this and going back up to the surface and discovering that there's a world there and there are beings that are different. And, oh my gosh, the whole thing is just fascinating.
So how did you find out about this one?
So I saw it on the new bookshelf and I was like, well, that is a tiny little book about mermaids. I could totally get into that. I had no idea, of course, that my mind is about to be just like broken into. And then I recommended it to Donald and mm-hmm. I think to somebody else too. And I was like, oh my gosh, you have to read this. It's so incredible. So once you step away a little bit from fantasy, like one half step towards sci-fi is To Be Taught If Fortunate by Becky Chambers. And if her name sounds familiar, she wrote The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet and that whole series, which is so good. And this is her novella. It's her first novella outside of that series. This book I read and I thought, this is the book that I'd want to live. Like, I'd want to be, if I had to be in a book and trapped in a book's universe, I would mm-hmm. want to be with her on the spaceship. It's exactly what I dreamed about as a child, like 100%. And there's a part of me, I think, that really never outgrew that desire to be an astronaut, but also to like explore these worlds that nobody else has ever seen. That and the whole thing has like that spirit of like scientific discovery. Mm-hmm. These aren't people who are going to like settle other worlds. They're just there for scientific purposes, which is rarer than it seems like it should be in sci-fi.
Yeah.
Like, just that like kind of like pure search for knowledge. The blurb for it was actually really interesting because I read it a few months ago. And when I read the blurb, it actually pinpointed one of the things that I had completely forgotten about the book altogether. It said, instead of terraforming planets to sustain life, explorers of the solar system instead transform themselves. Mm-hmm. So they go into like a stasis sleep in between planets. And part of that is that the stasis starts adapting their bodies for the environment that they're going to face.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So at one point, like their skin becomes all shiny because of like the quality of the UV rays. It either puts on weight for them for low gravity environments or takes it off for, you know, high gravity. I mean, it's just really fascinating. But that's like one small part of like what makes it really, really cool. So it follows Ariadne, who's this explorer on this research vessels, and they sleep between the worlds and they wake up each time with these different features. So, but as they wake up, they're trying to like get like these news feeds and stuff from back on Earth. And sometimes it's been like 5 years and sometimes it's been like 45 years. And
oh, wow.
All of this time is passing, which I mean, like, honestly, right now during like COVID, that it by itself is kind of an amazing draw, right? To be mm-hmm. able to step away from the world for a while and feel like you're, you know, away from that, like that constant pressure of like everything happening. And so even when they do go and watch and catch up, they're so distanced from it. She talks about like just seeing like the fashion changes. She said she, you know, she was prepared for lots of things to change, you know, for governments to change and cultures to change and everything. But she was like, they dress in a way that I can't even understand, which I loved that. It made me think of the foot binding. How, like, for hundreds of years, that was, you know, an important part of, you know, beauty and in a culture. And is something that we are so far removed from here as American white women that it's incomprehensible. Mm-hmm. And so when she talks about that, you know, like, of seeing these people and that the way that they present themselves and the way that they do everything is just so different. She's already so far away from that. Like, the idea of ever returning to it is not something that she can fathom.
So how many people are on this crew?
I want to say there's like 8. Like, they are all named and important characters. And so, and they each have like their function and their role on the ship.
And did they all leave something behind?
But something behind on Earth?
Yeah, like family or connections, I mean, or
all have families, all have lives there, and they talk about a little bit how, like, you know, you say goodbye, like you're leaving for a holiday, you know, because you know that you're not coming back in their lifetimes, but that's not something that you can really understand. Like, you keep on living and they keep on living. So how do you say goodbye, you know, in any way that matters?
Does she do as good of a job with the differences? Like, do you see any alien species or anything in here?
Yes.
And she does such a good job in her other series of actually making aliens different than humans.
Oh my gosh, so different. And I kept remembering some of those because I just read that book too. She does this incredible job. And honestly, I think that's why this is one of the books that I'd love to live in, is because they are going to these places and they're discovering life, and it's life that no human or no being that is outside of that planet has ever seen or experienced before. And sometimes it's so completely unknown to them that it takes a while before they understand it as life.
Yeah.
And, okay.
Oh my gosh. It's just, I love that. Some of the things that they discover as they wake up and they return to that news cycle is that their country of birth no longer exists, not just as like a political entity, but like as in climate change has sunk their country.
Oh, wow.
They will wake up and say that a cult has risen up around them as, you know, these travelers, as the news, you know, the news that they sent back in the last time. And then the next time they wake up, it's gone and hardly anybody is thinking of it. And then at some point, the newsreels stop. And that's when they really have to, like, make a decision about their future. Oh, it's all so good. Some of her really good quotes. I never knew an Earth that was unaware of life elsewhere. So, like, you're already starting at the beginning of the book in a distant future for us. She had always known that there was other life out there, and so that was part of her decision to, be like, go and be an explorer. Oh, and I was going to talk about how much I hate the title. It comes from this quote. We step out of our solar system into the universe seeking only peace and friendship, to teach if we are called upon, to be taught if we are fortunate.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, it's great. It's a beautiful quote. Mm-hmm. But when you just separate it into the title, I'm like, what is that even?
It just feels meaningless.
It does feel meaningless,
And it feels almost confusing as to, like, yes. You look at the book and you're like, I don't know, is this a book about teaching?
Yeah, I have no idea, right? She says, a spacecraft landing is no different than a boulder shifting, a meteor crashing, a tree falling. And unlike those objects, we do leave and we do clean up after ourselves. We try to be mindful tenants and ethical observers to have as minimal an impact as possible. At some point, you have to accept the fact that any movement creates waves, and the only other option is to lie still and learn nothing. So they do worry a lot about that and prepare for that to be, like, a negative impact on these worlds that they're mm-hmm. visiting, but they're like, the only other option is to never learn
anything. Not do anything, yeah.
And that's really, I mean, like, that's a huge ethical question, but it's something that they do have to face and that they actually do face in this book, as opposed to many others that are like, no, we're good. We're just going to go trample over all this.
Does it address loneliness? Because they're going to feel like they are outliers even amongst other humans.
Absolutely. And so, like, the crew does experience that. They experience mental health issues because of it. They bond together, but also there's breaks because they're all there clustered together. And their relationships become really unique because they're... I mean, nothing else is quite like being, you know, sent off to space.
And possibly at one point the last humans around.
Yeah. And you don't know for sure.
So. Yeah.
But no, it was one of those books. I finished it and I was like, not only do I want to live in this book, but I have no doubt that I'm going to read it probably a dozen more times in the coming years, which is lucky that it's short because I can do it really easily between other things.
What was one of your favorite planets that they explored?
Oh my gosh. Honestly, I kind of think that the last one, and it was just that, like, they were there and they thought that there was no life there. Like, that that was what... And when they finally found it, that eureka, that discovery moment was just so vivid after everything else that they had been through that I was just in awe. Like, for any amount of money that I have in my entire lifetime, I would give to go and be on that planet and studying microbes and just, I mean, if that's all that there was, it was incredible. And honestly, though, there was nothing about this book I didn't like. It was perfect.
That's high praise. How do we feel about Murderbot, which is its second time on
yes,
podcast? Interestingly, since we reviewed it, I actually brought it with me. Oh, it was the night that I was having to work at the emergency operations center.
Okay.
So in between phone calls, I was reading as much as I could. Did not get to finish it because of how the course of the evening went.
Oh, gosh.
So I enjoyed it heartily, but I'd love to hear what you have to say.
It's fantastic, obviously. It's their novellas, the Murderbot Diaries. There are four short novellas, and then this year she came out with a fifth book that's a full novel based in that world. And then she has actually another novella coming out in 2021. So that's a lot to look forward to there. I'm about halfway through the second one, and I'm very, very excited to read them all. This is another big leap in the direction towards sci-fi and away from pure fantasy. Murderbot is what it calls itself. You may remember from Katie's podcast, but I really love this quote. It explains what it is. It says, it's wrong to think of a construct as a half-bot, half-human. It makes it sound like the halves are discrete. Like, the bot half should want to obey orders and do its job, and the human half should want to protect itself and get the hell out of here. As opposed to the reality, which was that I was one whole confused entity. I love that, like, the Murderbot is like, oh, yeah, this is just, I'm going to be a amusing and not even really seem to realize it most of the time. I find a lot of like purity in that kind of humor, I guess.
Yes.
And I also enjoyed, well, I listened to the audiobook of this one. And so it's a man reading the story, which kind of caught me by surprise with the woman author. But then they go on to describe the murder bot as being a non-gendered, like completely non-gendered entity, which was really fascinating to me because as much sense as that makes, it still isn't something that we see a lot in sci-fi. Like even mm-hmm. like even just robots are usually referred to as a he or a she.
I mean, think usually. About like Data from Star
exactly.
Trek.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And I mean, like that's a completely human construct that we have just forced onto these poor robots without ever asking their opinion.
And I like that in these series of books he does give his opinion in that it is like, I don't want to be human. Like, I don't want you to make me more human. Being like a human grosses me out. It's gross.
It is gross. He said, I like the imaginary people on the entertainment feed way more than I liked real ones, but you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, well.
I felt like Murderbot Diaries was almost like this vindication for anybody that ever had misanthropic tendencies or thoughts, because it was a very empathetic way to approach that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, extremely. And I couldn't help but like wanting to mix this one and the Becky Chambers book together, because I think Murderbot would have just had so much fun on that trip.
Probably. Especially
so, anyway,
you didn't have to deal with people very much.
Yes.
Yes, yes. There you go, guys. Martha Wells and Becky Chambers, I need you to get together and co-write a book for me.
Just for you. It can be a novella.
It can be a novella. That's fine. You don't even have to publish it. You can have my email address.
So all three are pretty distinctly different from each other.
Very. Mm-hmm.
What audiences would you pick for the book?
Honestly, like, I think that anybody could really appreciate the humor of All Systems Red and the space exploration feeling of the Becky Chambers book, especially because, I mean, like, both are so very readable. Like, it does not take a huge interest in science fiction to make that leap. For the deep, I think I would recommend people who usually stick to poetry or even to, like, nonfiction history books, because I think that pull of that imagination of like where this originates in history is so huge that I just really think that's a group that would appreciate where it's coming from.
Interestingly, in the past, novellas have been kind of discounted because they're in that weird in between. You know, you can't throw them into a compilation of short stories and you can't publish them usually by themselves. Do you think one of the reasons why we're seeing a little bit of a surge in their popularity is because of ebooks?
I think that's definitely a possibility. And I think I'm pretty sure even the Becky Chambers book started off as an ebook and was only published later. I may be wrong about that. I think ebooks definitely do it. I think that like having libraries is a big deal because it's really hard to shell out $30 for a book that you can read in an afternoon, as opposed to one that's going to keep you busy all weekend. But I think that there's like something distinctly beneficial about, well, I've always loved a short story though, because you can do so much. You have a small space, everything can pack in. You can take out any unnecessary word. You don't, there's no filler in a short story and a really good one. And I think that the same can really be true of the novella. They got in there and they told their story in the most succinct and beautiful way possible, and then they just ended it. And I think that's perfect.
I actually even felt that way about Stephen King writes really good novellas,
yeah.
And I prefer them to his full-length
books.
Oh, my
goodness. The Shawshank Redemption was an unbelievably good short story. And, I mean, and of course became an award-winning movie.
I also think, specifically in It Feels Like science fiction fantasy area and in fiction is where you see a lot of the novellas, and in nonfiction you see a lot of much shorter nonfiction books. I think there is a trend that I have no data to back up of making these smaller or shorter books because you are trying to make things like more approachable to people, and also I think right now society doesn't want to sit down with a 400-page book all the time.
It's a lot these days.
Yeah, just in general, with having a lot to do, if you want to get people who aren't necessarily, they don't self-identify as readers, the best way to do it is to give them something approachable, something that takes less time to go through. Even when I was doing my teen book club, if I did short stories or novellas, they were way more likely to read them than if I gave them a full novel, especially because YA tends to skew towards the lengthy. So just giving something to someone that's 200 pages, they can sit down and be like, okay, I can do this. This is 1 week, even if I only read like 20 or so pages a day. It's much more approachable.
Definitely.
I noticed even James Patterson jumped on that bandwagon, and he's been doing the shots, is what he calls them.
Yes, yeah. Book shots.
I picked them up because they're cute. Like, look at
cute
this.
Little books.
They're cute little books. And the thing is, it's like I'm attracted to the cute little books and then the books that are like going to break my shoulder if I try to carry them in my purse. And I don't know if it's like cute versus impressive or if I just like, both of them stand out to me because they're on either ends of the spectrum.
I feel like the novellas can be really good palate cleansers too.
Yeah.
Like if you finish something heavy and long and you want to feel like you finish something else quickly.
Yes.
Yeah, I've read a lot of epic fantasy this year and I can tell you I appreciate these novellas.
Or if it's or if you're like in a slump and you're just like, I just need to read something to get out of it. You look at a novella and you're like, I can do this. And if I do this, then my brain will not think I'm in a slump anymore.
Exactly.
I will trick it.
Unfortunately, one of them did get lost in my purse. Like, my purse is not that big. Like, I have no idea how this happened. But like, in the midst of everything else, one day I was digging in there and I was like, oh, I meant to read this.
Oh my gosh, there's a book in here.
It does not happen when I'm reading a full Stephen King novel.
All right. Well, that's all the questions I have.
Yeah, those were some great options. I was thinking about reading To Be Taught a Fortunate, so it's very nice to hear some good news.
I highly recommend the audiobook. It's just delightful.
Okay.
Stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye!